Projectionist? Here we are again, my friend. A nice, leisurely drive. Heading to the Haunted Drive-In for the big event. I'm still amazed that you were able to pull this off, man.
Why is that, Victor? As a projectionist, I have my connections.
Sure, but to be able to see the new Halloween film 2 days before anyone else, that is pretty amazing. Hey, the recording light is on. Friends, we are almost to the Haunted Drive-In for a special screening of the new Halloween film.
Yes, it should be quite the turnout, dear listeners. Considering Victor took it upon himself to hand out free passes to nearly every soul in the Retroist Vault.
Come on now, I know you secretly love hosting these events. Rubbing shoulders with our co-workers and fellow Fright fans. Not to mention, you get to show off the true beauty of the Haunted Drive-In.
If you say so, Sage. If you say so.
At the very least, you should be enjoying the drive. The Retros let us borrow this beautiful 1958 Plymouth Fury. It handles so well, I would almost say that it's driving itself. Although, I can't help but notice that it looks like some massive storm clouds are rolling in. You don't think the event could be rained out, do you?
Don't be foolish. The Haunted Drive-In will take care of it. At least until we leave its protection, that is.
Speaking of safety, you're still positive the wards and stuff you put in place will keep out any threats?
Most certainly. Darnell and his minions will pay a pretty price if they try to assault the drive-in again. She will make sure of that. Besides, I might have left a warning to any would-be gate crashers the last time I visited. Take the next right.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over.
The drive-in is welcoming us back with open arms,
That's a good sign, I reckon.
Of course it is. She is practically aglow with having so many of our special guests in attendance. Although, I am confused as to why you didn't want me to run a Halloween marathon for our visitors.
You mean besides the fact there are like 7 sequels and 2 remakes? I don't think we'd be able to finish them all before the sun rose up, my friend. You've seen the original 1978 version, right?
Sage, no need to insult me. Of course I have seen the film, as well as played it back in 78. I will admit, I had no idea how the youth of Haddonfield would take to the picture, but it proved quite popular.
You had to come up with midnight showings, like with Night of the Living Dead?
No, not that popular, but it was indeed the lead film for a little over a month, as well as the fact we received it in re-releases over the following years. It always managed to draw in quite the crowd.
I can easily see that.
What about yourself, Victor? When did you first see the film?
I had the pleasure of seeing it at the 62 Drive-In, my friend.
You truly did see a remarkable number of films at that drive-in of your youth.
Oh, I did. I was very fortunate to do so. I know I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but while it took a few years to realize this, the 62 Drive-In didn't show first-run films, at least not initially. I am positive I saw Halloween in 1980, maybe on one of those re-releases you just mentioned.
Your father took you to see a slasher film when you were 5 years old?
What? No, I was 8 years old. Now, bear in mind, I was a monster kid, so the likes of seeing Michael Myers revisit his hometown of Haddonfield, well, the fictional Haddonfield, didn't really unnerve me.
And yet, the commercial for Magic, which was released in 1978 as well, sent you into hysterics.
Man, don't even bring that up. That is still a terrifying commercial. And if you don't believe me, there's a documentary on Shudder that talks about how it scared a lot of kids my age at that time.
Take the next left, Victor. So, how did you like Halloween?
Oh, I loved it, man. Definitely put me on the path of being a lifelong John Carpenter fan. Oddly enough, my father totally hated it.
Really? How so?
To be fair, I don't think he was ever a fan of the slasher genre. By the time we were able to see Halloween at the 62 drive-in, we had already seen 1980's Friday the 13th. My father definitely didn't care for that movie. When I bring up Halloween, he mentions how much he detests the bloodshed.
I do not recall a large amount of gore in 1978's Halloween.
Besides the opening of the film, when Michael murders his sister, there really isn't any bloodshed. There's definitely violence, of course. Actually, I do remember getting upset at one scene in the film.
Oh?
Yeah, when Michael kills the Wallace's dog. I remember tearing up pretty bad. You know what? That brings up something I've always wondered. If maybe some scenes in the film hadn't been switched around.
What do you mean?
Well, in the film, when the sheriff and Dr. Loomis are investigating the old Myers home, they discover a dead dog. Dr. Loomis mentions that Michael was hungry. I just wonder if maybe in the original shooting script, Michael killed the Wallace's dog and then retreated for a bit.
I will admit, I had never thought about that.
Personally, I haven't found anything that says that is the case. When I met John Carpenter at the San Diego Comic-Con back in 1998, I should have remembered to ask him that. I guess I was just too starstruck at meeting one of my idols to...
Oh, here we are, Victor.
Is that a human skull next to the ticket booth projectionist?
Why, yes. Do you not recognize intern Stevie?
Why would you put that out in front of the drive-in?
Calm yourself, dear boy. I told you I'd left a warning for any possible gate crashes. Pull the car up to the concession stand.
There is something so very, very wrong with you.
Agreed. It is the same thing the dear listeners realize every single time they tune in to our radio broadcasts. It's that I'm not the lead host of the program.
Well, that grisly trophy of yours notwithstanding, it is absolutely great to be back here again. I don't know how, but it smells just like those summer nights at the 62 drive-in, my friend.
How curious is that?
Vic, projectionist, man, thanks for inviting me out here. It's really great. It's really great to see you guys again. It's been such a long time. Hey, I don't know if I mentioned, but I really, really appreciate you guys taking part in the Summer Movie Awards every year. That, it's always so great just having you guys on. You know, your knowledge of horror movies is unparalleled, and you always come correct. It's looking really nice around here. You guys have made a lot of improvements since the last time I was here. It was really terrific before, but now it is outstanding.
Why, thank you, Mr. IC Robots. The Haunted Drive-In has a way of making itself more pleasing to those who can see her true beauty.
IC Robots, I feel we should thank you, my friend, not just for allowing us to be part of your yearly award show, but for managing to take the time to travel all the way from the depths of your ocean station to be with us. I'm pretty excited to see what this new Halloween is going to be like, man. Hey, you've seen the original film, right?
You know, dude, I haven't. I have seen the remake that Rob Zombie, he came out with some odd years back. But no, I've never seen the original with Jamie Lee Curtis and all that stuff. I was a bit of a wuss as a kid, and I couldn't bear to make it through these scary movies. I would get, like, the worst nightmares every time I saw anything horror-related. It wasn't until later in life that I started to get into horror at all. I don't consider myself an expert, not at all, like you guys, but I do enjoy a nice scary movie nowadays. But sadly, I have not gone back and looked at as many of the classics as I should have. And Halloween is one of those that I have not properly examined.
I wouldn't sweat it, I See Robots. I'm sure this movie will have something like a recap. Plus, with the Rob Zombie reboots, the story is basically the same.
Similar as cows on a horse's surge. Mr. I See Robots, I have to wonder why you would attend this event, eh? Would a soul venture out to view The Godfather 2 without having taken the time to see the first picture?
Projectionist?
Hey, hold on, Projectionist. Don't try to play me out like that. I may not have seen the movie, but I do got a story that I'd like to share with you guys. That is, it's related to Halloween by John Carpenter, so don't you fret none. Back in the day when I was in high school, me and my pal Jess, he went by the name of DJ Slug Nutty. He got invited to DJ a Halloween party. This wasn't like DJing at the Apollo Theater or anything. This was a small time thing, but he'd been trying to get over for a while, so any chance to rock the wheels of steel was appreciated. So he was like, I'll do it. I'll do this party. And he and I, you know, we spent some time together, like, talking over what might be some good stuff for the playlist. You know, we had some audio, too. We had some Big Daddy Kane, some Juice Crew stuff, all kinds of really neat music in our crates. You know, we kept all of our albums in, like, milk crates, all hip-hop style. You dig, Projectionist?
Yes, I do dig, Mr. I See Robots. One need merely wander past that tree line over yonder, behind the concession stand, to see how much digging I have done. And for whom?
Holy cow, Projectionist. That drive from the vault has made you pretty ornery, to say the least. I See Robots, I want to hear more about this party, my friend. I'm sure the listeners do as well.
Oh, I am sure the dear listeners want to hear all about these Victrola records that you brought to this ice cream social.
Yeah, I figured you'd say something like that. You are so contrarian, Projectionist. But at any rate, we went through the crates that we had, and we looked at the wax that we had, and we put together a pretty decent playlist of jams for the big party. Jams that would, like, blend in together, and it would sound all cohesive and be great. He was the DJ. I was the fool at the side who would hand him the records. This was mostly because he owned the turntables and he owned the mixer. I owned nothing, so I was the record hander, and I was happy with that role. I don't know, man. I don't have the dexterity to rock the wheels of steel. I'm no Iceberg 13. I'll say that. But we went over what we had, and we felt like what's really missing is some song for the climax. We need something for when the party reaches its peak. And we thought about it, and finally he goes, you know what we need? We need the Halloween soundtrack. We need that song that they play when he's stabbing everybody up, that one by John Carpenter. And I'm like, yeah, I know that one. That's perfect. Let's head down to the Last Record Store, and we'll cop this. This was back when the Last Record Store was on 4th Street next to Sawyer's News. Sadly, Sawyer's News has long since closed, and the Last Record Store is over by Big Lots now. It's still a great spot for cop and vinyl, and we headed over there to look for it, and we flipped through everything. We went to the H's, we went through the John Carpenters, we went through the movie soundtrack, and we could not find it anywhere.
That is absolutely one of the most amazing themes for a horror film. Like, of all time, man. Although it's pretty widely known that Carpenter wrote that theme in the 5/4 time signature, Carpenter has said he had come up with the memorable theme years before coming up with the story for Halloween. Now, was the LP just misplaced or something?
Eventually, we asked the dude who worked at the record store if they had it, and he informed us that this was kind of a rare vinyl and that they hadn't had one in stock in forever. So we became pretty determined to own this because this was like the only thing that could rock the party the way we wanted to rock it. So we decided to jump into Slugnut's caddy and head out. We headed out to Berkeley to go to Amoeba Records, which is another spot we would go to when we were looking for stuff. So we hit the John Carpenters, we hit the movie soundtracks, we hit the H's, you know, we hit everywhere we thought that it could be, but it was not there. So we decided to dip out of there and we went to the Amoeba Records in San Francisco. We were spending a lot of gas going around and looking for this. So we hit that place up, same thing, hit the H's, hit the Carpenters, hit the soundtracks, could not find it. But we decided, why not ask the dude who works there if he has any lead. So my man Slugnut, he goes up and he starts talking to the dude. And I can see this is becoming like an animated kind of conversation. And before I know it, dude's on the phone. He's on the phone talking to somebody. And Slugnut comes up. He goes, he didn't have it, but he knows a dude who has it. And he says, for $100, we can buy it from him. He's going to meet us in the parking lot over by the Lucky's. And I'm like, this is highly weird to me, but I guess this is what it takes to get your hands on the dope vinyl. I didn't have a job at the time, and $50 was a lot of money. Hey, man, I'll say that even today, $50 is a lot of money for me to spend on a record. I can't say outside of this I've ever done it. But we decided we got to come correct this party. Even if it takes $100, we gotta buy this record.
$100? Don't get me wrong, I totally understand going that extra distance so that things are perfect, but that is a chunk of change.
Yeah, I'm glad you agree, Vic. That's a lot of money. We don't all have the kind of stacks that you have, Projectionist. You seem to have like a limitless fund for collectibles, but the rest of us, you know, we gotta, you know, save money to eat and stuff. But at any rate, we went over to the Lucky's, and this was in not really that great of a part of town. So we waited and we waited and we waited. And finally, guy showed up and he looked fairly sketchy to me. He looked like somebody who might try to pop a cap in you when you went for your $50 to buy the wax. But he had it with him. He sold it to us, and we took it home all ready to cold rock the party. We went over the set, I practiced handing him the records, and then right at the ultimate spot, he'd throw down the Halloween soundtrack and it would be dope. Then finally, Halloween came around and we were wearing our hip hop gear. I had a beanie hat, you know, I had my backwards baseball jersey and all that fun stuff. And we're cold rocking it. We're rocking it. We're rocking it. It's going great. People are dancing. Like, you can feel the sweat in the air. It was terrific. And then when we felt it was the penultimate moment, I did it. I handed him the Halloween soundtrack and he threw it on and everybody stopped. Everybody kind of paused what they were doing, started looking around like, what the heck is this? And this went on for maybe, it felt like 10 seconds, it was probably more like 5 seconds, but they looked around like, what kind of music is this? And then all of a sudden, somebody jumped up, screamed, yeah! And everybody started dancing again, and it was as great as we would have hoped.
That is awesome, IC Robots. If you don't mind me saying so, as great as that memory is for you, I bet every single one of those people at that party remember it just as vividly, my friend. Right, Projectionist? Are you sulking?
Aw, man, that was nice of you to say, Vic. I'm glad you liked that story, Projectionist. I can see you didn't enjoy it that much, but still, you're polite enough to keep it to yourself. But I gotta get inside. I gotta get something to eat, man. And I'm afraid they're gonna run out of hot dogs. It only looks like there's one or two left over on the roller, and I was not able to stop and get something to eat on the way here. I wanted to finally see Halloween. Let's hope it's as good as you guys say.
By all means, Mr. IC Robots, help yourself to whatever you might wish to eat and drink. Come back for seconds if need be. You will find the haunted drive-in would cater to your needs. Besides, be sure to present a bill to the Retroist after our little event.
What did you just say?
Oh, nothing that concerns you, Victor. Why, I believe our next guest is just pulling up.
It's none other than Rockford J.
What? You invited intern Rockford J as well?
Of course, Projectionist. Is he driving a Messerschmitt KR-175?
Vic! Projectionist! It's nice to see you guys.
How dare you invite intern Rockford J, Sage? Why has the haunted drive-in allowed this?
Projectionist, just calm down. Calm down, relax. Just relax. Yes, I did agree to sort through your Mexican horror film microfiche tonight, but I got a special invitation from the Retroist himself. Yes. He appreciated all that restoration work I did for him on the Paul Lind Halloween special, and he invited me to tonight's festivities.
Yet again, the Retroist usurps my wishes.
Hush, Projectionist. Rockford, it is absolutely great to see you back at the Haunted Drive-In, man.
Well, to be honest, after attending last year's Haunted Drive-In get-together, I never really thought I'd get to come back for another one. I mean, I didn't think I'd live that long.
Oh, very wise fear indeed, intern Rockford J.
Well, you know, the other interns and the quiet hole, all that.
Rockford, you really can't let the projectionist keep putting you in the quiet hole. Seriously, the Vault HR department totally has your back on this matter.
Oh, those ninnies think their paper warnings are a threat to me. More fuel for my fireplace, Victor.
Anyway, I am super excited to be here for this week's Halloween-themed festivities. I love Halloween. The movie, of course. I mean, I love the holiday, too, but, you know, the movie and the franchise as a whole, really. I'm just a huge, huge fan of. I was too young, really, for the original when it came out in 78. I was not of an age that I got to see too many scary movies at the time, and that movie was too scary. At least, you know, that was the reputation that it had at the time. Halloween was just sort of like Star Wars, I guess, or Jaws, or some other really big pop culture phenomena of the time that it just seemed to sort of soak its way into everything. And so even if you hadn't seen the movie, you know, you knew the music and you knew Michael Myers and The Mask and Jamie Lee Curtis. And it just had a reputation, even for somebody who was my age. Sure, it was one of those playground things where, you know, everybody just sort of knew what it was.
I think that's a good point, Rockford. I was talking with Projectionist on our drive up to the drive-in about seeing the original Halloween at the 62 drive-in of my youth. But there were times when I wasn't able to see films on their opening weekend. One that comes to mind is Friday the 13th, Part 4, The Final Chapter. I can remember listening to a schoolmate by the name of Jeremy Riddle tell us all about the film during lunch, the Monday after it opened. So then, what was the first Halloween film you remember seeing?
The first movie I actually saw, though, was Halloween 2. We got cable, I guess, around 1982 when I was a kid, and the premium channel, you know, HBO, Showtime, whatever, the premium channel that we had was the movie channel. And at the time, Halloween 2 was on the movie channel 6 days from Sunday. It was on all the time, and I watched it all the time. If I was home from school for some reason or on a weekend, if Halloween 2 was on 3 or 4 times a day, there was a good chance I was checking in on it 3 or 4 times a day. And it made an impression. There's some really memorable kills and very memorable images. I think Fright Rags has done very well with that t-shirt of the blood tears coming out of Michael's eyes on his mask after Dr. Loomis and Laurie Strode have worked their firearm magic on him. And stuck in my head, you know, it's not something that I ever forgot. And I guess
I was a little bewildered, like everybody else, when Halloween 3 came out a couple of years later and there was no Michael Myers. My exposure to Halloween 3 was mostly through Famous Monsters. I remember seeing a lot of photos and articles about it at the time when I could find a Famous Monsters on the magazine rack at the grocery store on Friday nights when I would go with my grandfather. I know that particular film is kind of the odd man out of the franchise, but in retrospect, gosh, it's one that I really enjoy, even though, you know, it's sort of set apart from the main storyline, you know, to the extent you can call it a main storyline, considering how many flavors of Halloween there are these days. But Halloween 3, yeah, is one that is pretty fantastic and has a very special place in my Monster Kid heart. 4, 5, and 6, I saw on VHS or DVD. I'm not hugely fond of them. They seem a little on the cheap. The Cult of the Thorn angle, though, is kind of intriguing and it was an interesting sort of effort to put some mythology into Michael Myers. All three of those movies, really, for me, the reason to watch them and the reason that they hold together is they're all elevated by Donald Pleasance, and he really is, to me, the heart and soul of the Halloween franchise. He is the Van Helsing to Michael Myers Dracula. He's the Sherlock Holmes to Michael Myers Professor Moriarty, and he just really, you know, he gives 100% in all of those Halloween performances. And as the production values, you know, maybe not quite so much there in some of those films, Donald Pleasance really just sort of sweeps into that vacuum and plugs that hole and gives you a rooting connection to the original movie to keep you focused and interested in what was going on. And it's really a shame that he passed away before, you know, Halloween H2O came along and some finances and some media attention came back to the franchise. It would have been great, I think, one more time to have seen him share the screen with Jamie Lee Curtis. She certainly was in a different place in her career, and they, you know, would have been a little more on equal footing. And that's something that it's a shame that nobody got an opportunity to see. H2O probably is the first Halloween movie that I got to see theatrically, and I enjoyed it a lot at the time. I thought it was great that, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis, who was, you know, by then a very big movie star, had enough fondness for that character that she was willing to come back and revisit, you know, the whole Halloween franchise 20 years later. I actually saw H2O again today. It was on AMC, and it does show a little bit of loose threads. It shows, you know, certainly a lot of the influence of Scream, which I think is, you know, probably a big reason that movie got made in the first place. You know, it's got some of the humor, it's got the sexy teenagers, and it's got that big, booming Marco Beltrami score that sort of works and sort of doesn't. I'm a big fan of the original John Carpenter score. Seeing it today, it did sort of make my head snap and took me out of it a little bit. But, you know, it was a fun movie. It was a great movie. It had a great, you know, ending, which I won't spoil for the nobody listening to this who hasn't seen that movie, but is a very satisfying conclusion to the film and really to that thread of the Halloween franchise. And, you know, for my money, that was plenty. They could have stopped there. And the less said about the subsequent sequel and those Rob Zombie reboots, the better, you know, as far as I'm concerned. For me, really, it really all does come back to the original, which I don't think I fully appreciated until I was a grown man. I saw it again today. I saw it finally at a theater last weekend. And there's just an elegance to it. You know, there's a simplicity to the story. It's got that amazing Dean Cundey cinematography. It's got that fluid camera work from the Panaglide cameras that they used. It's got that long, slow burn buildup that gives you an opportunity to get to know everybody, to get comfortable in Haddonfield of 1978, so that when things start to go south, you care, you know, you're invested, you care about what happened to these teenagers, you care about the little town that death has come to visit. And of course, again, you know, that amazing score that John Carpenter wrote that is such an integral part of the mood of the movie, you don't really appreciate it. And how simple it is, you know, the same themes get repeated, you know, over and over again throughout the movie, but it just works. There's something about it that is unsettling, that builds a sense of dread and a sense of suspense, and there's really nothing like it. And it all really comes back to John Carpenter, the vision that he had and the way he sort of threw that movie together and grabbed everybody and said, hey, you know, this is our opportunity. We got this story. We got this enthusiasm. We got this talent. Let's go out and let's make this movie. And, you know, it's one for the ages. You know, we're 40 years down the road, and the new Halloween that's coming out is as anticipated, I think, as any movie in the whole season. And, you know, I'm from Kentucky. John Carpenter grew up in Bowling Green, Kentucky. You know, it's pretty well known. His father was a music professor at Western Kentucky University. My sister graduated from Western Kentucky University, and it's a campus that I'm familiar with. It's a town that I'm familiar with. My sister, she lives in Nashville now, and when I drive down to visit her, I pass by Bowling Green on the way, and I always smile when I see the sign on the side of the interstate that says, in big bold letters, Smith's Grove. And I'm always tempted to take a detour and see if Smith Grove Sanitarium is having Visitor's Day, and maybe Dr. Sam Loomis is seeing new patients. I could probably use some psychotherapy. Anywho, Vic, projectionist, I'm going to let you gentlemen visit with some of the other guests, and I am going to mosey on over to the concession stand for a terror dog, or maybe a stomach pounder. And yes, projectionist, I'm going to check the septic system first thing tomorrow morning, and I even have the hazmat suit in the trunk of the car.
Rockford, thanks a million for sharing your thoughts on Halloween.
Intern Rockford J, I apologize about my earlier behavior. You deserve to enjoy this new Halloween film with us.
See, projectionist, I'm always telling Rockford you're just pretending to be angry with him all the...
But I expect you in my wing of the vault at the crack of dawn. When you are done with the septic system, I'm positive the quiet horror needs a good hosing down, eh?
Rockford, try to enjoy the show, okay? Hey, projectionist, check it out. I think Ashley Thomas has arrived.
Hey, Vic, projectionist. Fancy seeing you two here. I'm really excited for the premiere of the latest Halloween film. I love Jamie Lee Curtis, and I've never gotten to see a new Halloween movie at a theater before. So thanks for letting me know about this premiere at the Haunted Drive-In tonight.
No problem, Ashley. I'm just glad you were able to make it out here.
I wanted to talk to you guys tonight about the original Halloween film from 1978. Now, growing up, I was never really one for horror films. I spooked really easily, and I just really couldn't get into it unless it was like an Alfred Hitchcock film. Now, one of the things that actually got me really interested in the horror genre was actually Saturday Fright's podcast, as well as the Retroist podcast. While I didn't enjoy watching horror films very much, I did really find it fascinating learning how they were made and produced, because oftentimes many of these now iconic classic horror films all had very small budgets. And I thought it was so fascinating to hear about the creativity that went into making the films work.
I believe Orson Welles said it best, Ashley Thomas. The enemy of art is the absence of limitations.
Good one, projectionist. I think the lack of a big budget, coupled with Carpenter's can-do attitude with his films, it definitely forced him to make the best decisions. The popularity of Halloween, as well as some of his other projects, proves he knows what he's doing for sure. Hey, Ashley, when did you first really take notice of the 1978 film?
I really got a good introduction to Halloween via the Retroist podcast, and was especially fascinated to hear about the camera work, but also what made the iconic Michael Myers mask, you know, a modded Captain Kirk mask. So all of that was just so fascinating to me. 2 years ago, I got my first chance to see the original Halloween. It was at one of my local independent theaters here in Charlotte, North Carolina, the Ayersley Grand. They do a retro horror marathon all during October. They played the first two Halloween films, which I had never seen before. It was wonderful to get to see these films on the big screen, And they played pre-show before the first film where they did an interview with John Carpenter, and you got to learn more about the cinematography. And having that information and then going to watch the film really made me appreciate it even more.
A lot of the Fathom Events special showings I've attended do similar things, where either the director or perhaps a film historian introduces the movie, gives some interesting anecdotes about the filming, etc. It does help, I think, in particular with a younger audience, to educate them in just how much work goes into bringing a film to the big screen.
Something else I noticed, too, when I watched the Halloween films, was that I have a favorite type of horror movie. And that favorite type is monster in shadow. I had grown to love horror by now, or by that point. And one of the things that I thought made the Halloween films so spectacular was that you never got a really close look at Michael Myers. I realized, I think part of the reason that appealed to me so much was that the very first horror film I watched was Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. My cousin and I watched that when we were about 10 years old at Christmas, funnily enough. And I just became enamored with that type of story. You never get a good look at Norman Bates. And I think I have been fascinated with that kind of monster ever since. My favorite movie of all time is Alien. My favorite John Carpenter film is Halloween. And he even uses that technique in a lot of other films as well, like The Fog and even in The Thing. I think that's why I'd say the 1978 Halloween is my favorite.
I definitely think masterpiece is appropriate when talking about Halloween, Ashley. I guess we will see how this new movie measures up to the first one, huh?
Okay, guys, I'm going to hit the concession stand, try to get my customary sour gummy worms and cherry cola. I'll see you guys at the screening.
Take as much as you need, Ashley Thomas. You are a guest at the Haunted Drive-In. You can be rest assured that while here, you will see the best print on that screen over there. And the popcorn is fresh, and soda's deliciously sweet, and... what is that electronic caterwauling, Victor?
I think it's a call coming in from the vault. Yeah, it's the Retroist.
No doubt spying on us, or seeing what fate has befallen intern Rockford J.
You are so paranoid, man. Hey, Retroist!
Hey, Vic. Hope you guys are having fun. Wish I could be there, but I'm back at the vault, holding down the fort. Things are pretty quiet here.
Thanks again for agreeing to watch the vault so we can have this event. We do wish you could be here in person, though, my friend. I hope, though, you have something fun to do while you're manning the vault.
Thinking of maybe watching a film. Maybe Halloween 2?
Good choice.
2 years ago, I had the opportunity to go see Halloween 2 on the big screen. Well, not so much the big screen, but on a larger screen than my home screen. It was a small movie theater that was showing it. They were showing it as part of a Halloween 1 and 2 double feature. It was surprisingly uncrowded. I was enjoying it, but then I needed to use the restroom. I don't know what it is about going to see horror films and then having to use restrooms in movie theaters. But I went down to use it, opened the door, and there were no lights. I reached over to the side of the door to try to turn on the lights. Nothing. Now, here's the thing. I know that there's no Michael Myers in there. Nobody's gonna kill me. That's the logical side of my brain. But the part of me that has watched tons of horror films knows that this is in fact the time where Michael Myers is going to kill me. I'm going to reach around, touching the walls, and instead I'm going to touch some huge person, and then that's it. That's the end of me. I die in a disgusting second-run movie theater bathroom with a half-eaten box of Milk Duds in my back pocket that's spread all over the floor, and then Michael Myers walks out to get his next victim. That's not how I want to go. I'm not saying that's not a really cool way to go. I'm just saying it's not my number one choice. So I went back to the theater, and I just waited till the end of the movie. Halloween 2 has a lot of the same strengths as the first Halloween. It's moody, it's got great actors, and the Michael Myers character is terrifying enough that it stopped me from using a bathroom.
Retroist, at the very least, you have a story you could share from that ordeal.
I hope you guys are having fun, not getting up to anything dangerous. I know this is that time of year when something crazy always happens to you guys. Just so you know, I'm here if you need me.
You know it, man. Thanks again for letting us all off at the vault tonight so we can have this event. By the way, it looks like Allison Venizio is just pulling up. Talk to you later, Retroist. Hi there, Allison.
Hi, Vic. I'm glad I made it back to the drive-in.
You are always most welcome, Allison Venezio, at the Haunted Drive-In. Unlike Victor here, you always share the most interesting observations with the dear listeners.
I'm standing right here, Projectionist. Allison, did you grow up with the Halloween films?
You know, I came a little late into the Halloween franchise, but as the saying goes, better late than never. Am I right?
Definitely.
I didn't see any of the films until the mid-2000s, but I'd always heard about this one strange entry into the series about Halloween masks and the incorporation of science fiction into a horror film. Oh, and that earworm of a commercial that all the kids watch in the movie. Have you seen this?
I do believe you are referring to 1982's Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
I am talking about Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. The initial reception of the film in 1982 was overly negative, as the film departed from the original plot of Michael Myers killing his way through Halloween night in Haddonfield, and instead opted for a totally different story that involved an Irish novelty company owner with a sinister agenda involving manufacturing of his Halloween masks, calling upon the mystic powers of Stonehenge to resurrect the ancient aspects of the Celtic festival Samhain, a different aspect of which is the basis for the modern-day Halloween. However, a doctor and a murder victim's daughter are on to this individual and his plan for the commercials his company airs on Halloween night. The reason that this film receives the backlash that it did was the aforementioned departure from the Michael Myers storyline. John Carpenter and Deborah Hill initially planned to take the franchise in a different direction, with a new film each year depicting different characters, making it an anthology series of sorts. To me, if this had been a completely unrelated film, in other words, not called Halloween 3, it should have just been called Season of the Witch, then this film would have been received differently. Obviously, we know what happened as a result, but the real shame is that the film was dealt such a bad hand.
A most astute observation. I recall posters being sent out after the film had been released to replace the one sheets we had originally received. These new editions came with a blurb warning patrons that the character of Michael Myers did not appear in the film.
Well, he sort of does. You see ads for the Halloween film on the TV in a couple of shots. What did you think of Season of the Witch, Allison?
I'm not going to tell you it is the greatest movie I've ever seen, but the concept of a novelty maker with a nefarious scheme to create masks that call upon pagan rituals that ultimately commit violence against children is disturbing, yet... is intriguing the right word? Now hear me out. I say intriguing because this is an area that is considered taboo in the media, and it is not only a kill the children movie, but... this is one of those no-one-is-going-to-survive kind of movies, especially when it is revealed that the masks are so much more than just innocent masks. Gives me the chills just thinking about it. I was one of those people that heard about this notoriously bad Halloween movie that wasn't really a Halloween movie at all. I went into it with the same impression the theater-goers in 1982 did, and while I wish I hadn't known anything about it going in, I didn't really find this to be the worst film either, and that seems to be the consensus with horror film fans over the years. Opinions have softened about it in the last 36 years since its release. After seeing it again in preparation for this trip to the drive-in, I found myself looking forward to watching it again and being completely engaged in the idea that there was someone out there with such a crazy agenda involving the completely innocent aspect of Halloween. Call me crazy, but this really isn't such a bad film. It just had the distinction of being called Halloween 3. One of the aspects, actually, that I liked about this film was the idea of taking it in a whole other direction. Taking it, in the anthology direction. And I think John Carpenter probably could have had a good thing going with the idea of this. But, obviously, people knew what they wanted to see. And he knew what was going to make money. And if this was the beginning of something that probably wasn't going to be as profitable, then I could see why he obviously went back in the direction of Michael Myers, but the fact that they stayed away from it for 6 years and kind of just let it rest until they did bring in this whole, the whole story of Jamie Lloyd and, her, obviously, everything that happened to her in the next three films. They knew that they were getting it right. They knew that they were bringing in the right storyline and not just continuing on with something that obviously wasn't going to be marketable. Would I have liked to have seen an anthology of sorts that wasn't, obviously not called Halloween, but obviously were Halloween-type movies that took place around the holiday. You know, not Halloween-type movies, but because it didn't feature Mike Myers, but movies that took place around Halloween. Yeah, definitely. I would have definitely have wanted to see this, because it would have probably been very memorable. But I guess he realized that maybe this was an omen, and having this story about the Halloween masks and that catchy song probably wasn't a good sign of things to come. But I would definitely have seen it. And I'm sure there definitely would have been some people out there that would have. And, you know, that's the whole thing about cult classics. There's always going to be an audience. It's just going to happen many years later. And this is obviously one of those that's become a cult favorite, so to say, even though it's, you know, not great. It's certainly memorable. And if only for the fact that the doctor was kind of you know, they made him out to be a drunk, which I thought was a little, weird, being that he wasn't visibly intoxicated at any point. But I thought the one part that I think really kind of, you know, made me laugh about that whole story about this whole season of the witch plot was the fact that he just kind of jumped right in the bed with, this young woman that he met, like, hours earlier. So I guess he probably realized that this was not the lead that they needed to actually make, you know, to kick off this whole, you know, series of anthology films. But I definitely did like the story. The plot was actually pretty good. And like I said, it was intriguing in a way that this guy would have come up with these Halloween masks. You know, obviously John Carpenter knew what he was doing, and he knew how to, you know, go back to what worked, and he did. And obviously the Halloween series has been, you know, successful as a result.
I guess the studios are holding their breaths to see how this new Halloween is received by we older fans and a new generation. I mean, they aren't going with something like Season of the Witch, but it is a pretty bold path to take, to ignore all the previous sequels, nonetheless.
You know, I'd love to stick around, but the movie's about to start, and Popcorn and Bunch of Crunch are calling my name, so I'm going to run to the concession stand and satisfy this need. Thanks for inviting me back. Enjoy the movie!
Well, now, Victor, this appears to be a rather good turnout, eh?
Yeah, looks like most of the vault staff has shown up. When Allison was talking about Halloween 3, I received a text from Earl Green. Looks like he won't be able to join us. He's up to his neck in work, but he wishes us all the best and hopes the movie is really good.
I suppose there is nothing left to do now, Sage, but to start the picture.
I guess so. I'm excited, Projectionist. Thanks again for letting us hold the event at the Haunted Drive-In, my friend. Surrounded by good friends and fans of the Halloween series, I can't think of a better way to see this new Halloween.
Indeed, Victor. Well said. Besides, with the history of this little town of Haddonfield, it only felt appropriate that we host a special screening.
Yeah, I suppose.
In particular, with the incident of 78 occurring just a few miles from here.
Yeah. Wait, what?
There's a reason we're supposed to be afraid of this night.
I've been preparing for this for a long time.
It is not safe to be on the street tonight.
Go home! Get out of here! Get inside! Michael?
He's here.
He is a killer, but he will be killed tonight. Happy Halloween, Michael.
Friends, thank you for listening to the Saturday Frights podcast. We owe a great deal of gratitude to our guests on this, our fifth Halloween special. We wish to thank IC Robots, who has his own podcasting empire with the likes of the fantastic Toys R Us Report, where he discusses everything from the latest films and pop culture to visits to his local thrift shop, which you can easily find and more by simply visiting icrobots.com. That is, icrobots.com. Of course, Allison Venezio can be found every week at The Retroist. sharing video treasures and musical knowledge. In addition, she has her very own website at AllisonVeneziowrites.com. Ashley Thomas, aka the Nerdy Blogger, has a spot on the internet set up at nerdyblogging.wordpress.com. Rockford J can be found every single day sharing his love of retro horror films over at the Saturday Frights Facebook page. My co-host, The Projectionist, has a spot on Facebook as well. Just look for Projectionist Haunted Drive-In. Every day he shares all manner of classic film posters and images, as well as facts from all types of movies. I too can be found on Facebook, as well as on Twitter, but almost every single day I write an article on the Retroist site. The Saturday Frights podcast is available on Spotify, iTunes, and even Instagram. Hey, if you have a moment and you enjoy the show, why not leave us a positive review? Help us get the word out to other Fright fans. Of course, we have to thank The Retroist as well, not just for hosting our podcast, but for providing all of us fans of pop culture a spot on the internet where we can share our memories and love for all things retro. When you need your retro fix, and we all do, make sure to hop on over to The Retroist. And listeners, from the projectionist and myself, Happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween! This has been a Retroist production. Sleep well and goodbye.